Hello and welcome to another episode of Industry Relations with me, Rob Hahn, and Greg Robertson. Greg, hola. How are you?
Hola, how's it going, Rob?
It's going great, man. It's actually kind of sunny here in Texas. How is it over by you, which is paradise on earth?
Oh, Huntington Beach is doing well. It's a little foggy this morning. You know, the joke is always, we always measure things of how close to perfect it is. It's not anything else.
But exactly. I think anybody from Southern California complaining about the weather should just, you know, be forced to live a winter in Minnesota and then a summer in Houston. So I look at that.
Yeah, we complain about the taxes a lot here. So not
well. That's true. That's true. You're
other things to complain about.
Your fiscal climate is awesome. Your business climate, not so much. But we're not going to talk about that today. We are actually going to talk about important stuff.
Well, we are kind of going to talk about it. I mean, taxes. That's somewhat in the realm, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I think we said we want to address what's going on north of the border because the other border is getting all the attention in the news these days, but north of the border, for our industry, obviously there's crazy things happening in the province of British Columbia up in Canada.
Yeah, I got to say, I mean, I received the Swanepoel Trends Report, and they gave me kind of a complimentary copy, which I left on a damn plane, man. I only got like halfway through, and I left it on a plane. I've got to get Jack to send me another copy, or I got to buy some for my crew. I got through the first, you know, couple chapters, and the first chapter, I think it was the first or second, was on this, what was going on in Canada, right? And right. I think when you and I were talking about this, I mentioned that to you, and you said, hey, man, I wrote that chapter. So I thought, well, hell, this sounds like an opportunity. So I got the author here on it.
Yeah. I haven't seen the final draft, final copy yet. So, you know, there may be some tweaks and some things that Jack and Stefan changed. But yeah, it's a really big issue, man. I mean, I think it's, and it's something I've been talking about kind of out on the tour, you know, out on
the
circuit.
Yeah, exactly. About the regulation could take over here, right? That's kind of one of your big fears here.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's been one of my big issues with everything. You know, I mean, you know, I'm a libertarian at heart. And the thing that I'm always afraid of is if we, as an industry, don't do the right thing, like there's a really good shot that, you know, regulator is going to step in. Right. And then the whole nine scariest words of the English language. Right. I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And, you know, this has been like a boogeyman for a few years, but we've actually finally seen it now happen in North America. You know, as I wrote in the chapter, I don't know if it made the final cut. And one of the things I like to talk about is, look, I mean, this isn't, you know, Italy. Right. This isn't some European country or, you know, Hong Kong that's doing this. This is Canada, where our system and their system is so similar, right? The legal system is very similar. Right. The real estate system is very similar. You know, they have
self-regulation.
Realtors. Correct. Right. It's all very, very similar. You know, buy side, sell side. You know, we have cooperation and compensation. So I felt like the parallels are so, so many that whatever's happening up there, I think it's worth our paying attention to it and sort of think about, you know, what happened and how do we avoid that happening?
But even in this kind of current climate of, you know, a quote unquote so-called Republican cabinet.
So-called is right.
But I mean, these guys are not regulators, right? This whole thing is about, I mean, I just read something rather recently where, you know, there was supposed to be some regulation put in place so that financial planners basically had to reveal that they were also making money selling you some of the products they were due, but now they might not have to do that. I mean, so it seems like this administration is not really, I mean, if they're not going to do stuff like that, I mean, I can, maybe the real estate industry is safe for, at least for the next, I don't know how long you want to give them, two, sure. three, 4 years,
sure.
right?
Sure.
So, I mean, is it really a real threat in this administration though, really?
I think it is for a couple of reasons. One is that the regulation of real estate typically doesn't happen at the federal level. It happens at the state level. You know, just like what happened, you know, in Canada, it's not a national, you know, Canadian, Canada-wide regulation. This is one province, right? The province of British Columbia that did this. So when you look at kind of where this could happen here in the States, I don't know that we'd see national regulation, but I could easily imagine something happening in California.
Yeah. And you know, maybe it's a good start. Maybe some of our listeners don't know what happened up there. And I mean, you wrote this chapter. Maybe you can give us a real quick overview of what's going on up there.
Sure. I mean, I'll try to keep it as quick as possible, but it's really complicated. So, you know, maybe just start it off with a shout out and a pitch for Stefan. If you really kind of want to get a better, you know, grasp of what happened, I'd say if you don't have one already, if you haven't picked one up, go pick up a copy of the 2017 Trends Report. Greg, we probably should bill Stefan for this free advertising. But in any event, so what happened is it's a mix of things. Number one, Vancouver, the city up in British Columbia, is probably one of the most dysfunctional real estate markets in the world, right? According to, there's a study, you know, about kind of unaffordable real estate markets. I think what came out was Hong Kong was number one, Sydney, Australia was number two, and then Vancouver was number three, okay? So, you know, in terms of like the median price of homes versus median income, I mean, it's insane, you know, how bad it is, right? So that's the first thing to keep in mind. What's the source of that, right? Is because there's a lot of foreign money just flooding into Vancouver, and primarily it's Chinese money that's flooding into Vancouver. So you already have a background of sort of simmering resentment, right? By, you know, by native Vancouverites, by native Canadians who feel like all of a sudden they can't afford to live in their city.
Right.
So that's sort of the background simmering resentment. Then the specific issue that happened was this practice up there called shadow flipping. And one of the major newspapers, the Globe and Mail, did a big expose on it. So what is shadow flipping? So what it is you have a buyer that goes in, you know, you look at a house and you say, okay, I want the house. You put in an offer and the offer gets accepted. And now you have a contract for sale. Okay. What was happening there was the standard form contract, I guess, that they were using contained the clause that said the buyer is able to assign that contract to anybody else without seller approval. Okay. And the rationale behind this clause in the beginning was it was seller protection, right? Because, you know, obviously once you're in contract and the buyer has to back out, the seller's left in a pretty bad spot, right? I mean, he's got to remarket the home and all of that.
Right.
So the idea was, look, if you want to step out, you can, but you got to find another buyer who's willing to come in and purchase this house at the exact same terms and price that we have agreed to, right? So if somebody's willing to take over your contract, I'll let you out of the contract, you can go. But what started happening was that people would get a contract and they would resell the contract.
And this was due, if I remember correctly, that it wasn't just, I mean, the prices were going up. It was the acceleration, the
right.
rate of how fast. If I looked at that chart, I think in the book, it was hockey stick. So
correct.
You could literally in a month see fluctuations of tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars for property. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah, so that's the main reason is that it was prices growing up so quick, so fast that
right.
the float was a big deal.
Right. I mean, and this I quoted this in the article, but there was a newspaper story that had some information on it. A average price of a detached home sold in September, and I think the September of 2015, it was $1.4 million. By October, the average price was $1.6 million. By December, $1.7 million. And 1.8 million
Crazy.
In like January. I mean, so in other
Crazy.
Words, over a period of 3 to 4 months, the average price increased by over $400,000. So when you have that kind of price, you know, appreciation, absolutely made all kinds of sense to flip the purchase contract as much as possible, right? Especially when, you know, contract to close might be 90 days out, right?
Yeah, so, God. Just it's a, and then you got some enterprising realtors and brokers.
Exactly.
And you really have a recipe for success, right?
Exactly. So what ends up happening, so shadow flipping this big controversy was a broker would go in, you know, representing a client. The client would say, okay, great, you know, I'll purchase the house and say, you know, they'll agree to $1 million, right? Okay. So the seller's like, in theory, seller's happy. Okay, I got my asking price. Wonderful. And then the broker who represented the buyer would immediately go out and try to shop that deal and find a buyer for the contract. So he finds somebody else. That guy would come in and say, oh, I'll pay 1.2, right? The initial buyer says, great, here's my sale contract. I made 200 grand. And the agent, right, the realtor in the case, would then collect another buy-side fee for the 1.2. Right.
Genius.
And then you would flip it again to 1.4, 1.6, you know, whatever it is, however many times you can flip that contract. And at the end of the day, you know, at the closing table, the buyer is shelling out $2 million. The seller's collecting his $1 million because that's the asking price he agreed to. And, you know, all along the way, you know, every person in that chain got paid. And the realtors collected like 5 different commissions.
This was a law designed to protect the seller.
And again, the original idea behind this clause, it wasn't even a law. It was just a clause, right? It's a contract clause. Was designed to protect the seller in case the buyer has to pull out, you know? So as you can imagine, right? As you can imagine, people start getting pissed off, right? Because the seller realizes, oh, I got my million. And initially, maybe he's happy. He's like, oh, I got my asking price. Until he sees that like 2 weeks later, there's a for sale sign going on his house and it's being listed for 1.8. You know what I mean? Like things like that are happening.
Right, right.
And then obviously once this started going, a number of realtors up there started essentially taking part in the purchase. In other words, they weren't anymore satisfied with just representing the buyer and collecting the commission on that. They started becoming the buyer, okay? So they would literally walk in and say, I will pay $1 million, right?
Oh, just to get the party started, right? So it's like—
Not only that, but think about it, right? The gains are so much that they would stand to make more money, right? If they're the original purchaser.
You know, what's that saying about like, pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered, right?
Yeah,
I mean, you just can't leave well enough alone.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to go in there just as much as you can squeeze out of it, right?
Correct.
And this is what got them in trouble, right? This just practice just started happening all over the place.
Correct.
And then finally, what do they call it? The real estate agency or whatever their name is for the governing body there had to step in, right? And they came up with a list of recommendations, right?
Right.
Replace everything, right? And these were like, you know, this was like blowing everything up that was going on there.
I mean, so basically you have the media, you have the, you know, Globe and Mail. And then once they do it, obviously the rest of the media up there, you know, pile on, right? And just, you know, do this huge expose, right, on this practice. So there's this huge firestorm among the public. They're like, this is ridiculous. We need to stop it. They start putting pressure on the politicians. The politicians respond by directing the regulator to do something about it. Now, here's the thing, and this is the important lesson. This is the point that I always make when I go and speak about this issue to realtor associations here in the States, which is the minute that the government gets involved, as I like to put it, the government rarely uses a scalpel when a chainsaw is handy. In other words, if the issue was shadow flipping, all they needed to do was make it such that before you are allowed to assign the sale contract, you have to get seller's approval, right? I mean, that almost eliminates the problem right there. Just that one fix almost entirely gets rid of shadow flipping. But the government doesn't work that way, especially when it's become a political issue with the media following it. So what they did instead was convene a, quote, blue ribbon panel called the Independent Advisory Group, who went through and looked at everything. And then they issued a report with like 26 recommendations in it. And it goes way beyond the issue of shadow flipping, way beyond. To the point where, long and short of it is, there is no more self-regulation in British Columbia now. Realtor associations in British Columbia no longer have anything to do with regulation of the practice of real estate. And the report was quite pointed about that. The premier of British Columbia even got on TV and said things like, you know, self-regulation is a privilege and clearly these, you know, real estate brokers have done a terrible job. So we're going to take that away, smack them down and, you know, we'll regulate like crazy.
And I think a lot of it now is that they've got such a record-keeping nightmare that they have to do as well, right?
So, I mean, it's some of the recommendations are just amazing. Oh, yeah,
they're not even recommendations anymore, from what I understand.
Oh, yeah.
They basically put recommendations and they just said, okay, yeah, all 26, you're in.
They're correct.
In. Yeah, crazy.
Now, I mean, I don't know if all of them have gotten in, but a lot of them have gotten in, right? And what's going to happen next from there, and you know, I probably should do a better job of trying to really keep on top of what's going on up there, but they've changed the way the regulatory body works. And previously, and one of the biggest issues that they report talked about was something called regulatory capture, meaning the official governing body, the regulatory body in British Columbia is something called the Real Estate Council. And the people that were sitting on the real estate council, the majority, if not the supermajority, were realtors. And they would be appointed to it by local realtor associations. Okay? So mm-hmm. you have the, you know, real estate council, and there'll be somebody sitting on there, you know, from the Vancouver Association. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And of course, those positions were either appointed, or oftentimes they were elected by the local realtor association. So the report comes out and says, this is not going to do, you know, because again, the thought is, you know, you have these real estate people sort of protecting each other instead of looking out for the consumer. So they essentially, they appointed a new superintendent of real estate who has far more power, just a lot more power. And I mean, you could call him sort of the real estate czar of British Columbia now. And he can do, you know, more or less what he wants now. Okay? So it's not clear what's going to happen next. Like, what's the next shoe to drop? One thing we do know about government regulators as a rule, as a general rule, is if they have power, they tend to want to exercise that power. So we'll see what future things come down. But like just as a couple examples, right? They increase the fee, the penalty, right?
Oh, yeah. And there's like clawback, like if you receive commission on something. And I think they're actually enacting that where one of the brokers has got to pay back, you know, some millions of dollars for some shady deal or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So if you do something and the superintendent determines that you're in violation of the rules, then there's a clawback. So you got to, you know, quote, disgorge all your profits. Plus, there's a fine that's up to $250,000. For the individual salesperson, and $500,000 for brokerage.
Ouch.
And administrative penalties, and it's not even clear what those are, the maximum is $50,000. You know, there's all these other things that were done. And more or less, at this point, real estate agents and brokers in British Columbia, I mean, we almost have to think of them as quasi-government employees at this point.
Well, that's Rob Hahn.
That's my extreme position, I suppose. I mean,
well, let's bring it back though. Let's like sure. say, okay, so I think, you know, you laid it out very well. So, you know, there was problems up there. It was a very heated market. Mm-hmm. The government had to step in. But, you know, let's bring it back to the beginning of the conversation. Could it happen here? Like, right. you know, we're set up differently, right? So, you know, maybe San Francisco might have some of these issues. Mm-hmm. Not really, because it's really inventory that there's a problem, but there's not a lot of, you know, the values aren't going up that fast. But, you know, somewhere like, you know, Placerville is not, right? So
sure.
could this happen, in your opinion, in this administration and in this, is there any city or any area that has this type of thing going on? I would say no.
I disagree. I think there's a really, I mean, in my mind, I wouldn't be surprised in the least bit if this happened in California. Because, like I mentioned...
The entire state?
The entire state. And here's why, right? Hong Kong is the worst, most dysfunctional market. Sydney's number two, Vancouver's number three, okay? Thing is, in the top 10, I think there are 6 markets in California. In the top 10. And I don't have the list in front of me right now. What's like the heart of Silicon Valley? Like San Jose? Market?
Well, you could be Palo Alto, you could be Santa Clara County, basically. Yeah,
basically, like that's the most dysfunctional market in the U.S., followed by San Francisco, San Diego, L.A., parts of Orange County. And by dysfunctional, what I mean is that the median price of a home is many, many times the median income. That's sort of my definition of dysfunctional. So maybe it doesn't have that quick price acceleration component of it, but like Vancouver, the price to income ratio was 10.8, meaning the person making the median income in that market would need 10 times his salary to buy a house, right?
I mean, that's pretty close to Orange County.
Exactly. And I'm like, parts of Silicon Valley. Yeah. I mean, we're probably close to 8-9 at this point.
Yeah, but it's not really just that. It's really that, you know, the thing that made that happen was that acceleration. You can't have shadow flipping unless there's a hockey stick happening in the valuation of the homes, right? I mean, that particular factor really isn't happening down here or anywhere in California that I know of.
Right. The thing is, I think it's a mistake, right? In other words, shadow flipping doesn't happen in the U.S. because most of the contracts here, you can't just willy-nilly assign things.
Right, right.
So that's not the particular issue. My point, though, is whenever you've got dysfunctional markets, right, where, you know, the price to income is completely out of whack, or you have price appreciation that's just out of whack, my feeling is dysfunctional markets create dysfunctional business behavior. Let me give you one concrete example that does happen in California, in the US, which is all the pocket listing activity, right?
Yeah.
Like, if things were relatively normal, you know, I don't know that there's a huge financial incentive to engage in pocket listings. But if things are completely out of whack, then I think it creates more of an incentive to do that. And when you see things like that, when you see dysfunctional sort of, you know, business behavior, right, activities that aren't necessarily putting the consumer first, there's always the threat that the government will step in, right? That the media will first notice it and they'll do a big story about it. And then the next step is government stepping in. And like I said, the government never steps in, you know, softly. They never do like a precision, you know, reform, right? They're much more interested in, you know, getting headlines and newspapers. So they'll do this huge, big, you know, blue ribbon panel type nonsense.
Right. So your point's that, you know, okay, maybe the symptom of shadow flipping or whatever the cause up in Canada
right. That
caused the government to come in, you know, that was a specific thing to that market. But
Correct. There
are certain things that you see that may be just as bad or could be as bad in markets here in the U.S.,
Yeah. Maybe
not that type of situation, but other types of situations
Yeah. That
could cause the government to come in. That's your point.
That's, you know, absolutely my point. And the thing is, the things like regulatory capture, that was such a big focus of this. You know, so British Columbia went on and on about like the, you know, vast majority of the people sat on the real estate council were realtors, right? And they were industry representatives and they smacked that down.
They had to improve the mix. I think it was like there were 8 people on and all of them were real estate people. So now
Right. The
mix has got to be different than that. Right?
Now it's like no more than 50%. But even with that, this new superintendent of real estate has a lot more power. You know, so one of the things that you look at is if you look across the country, all 50 states, a lot of the real estate regulators here in the US are set up exactly the same way. I think it's Nevada where every single person on the real estate commission is a realtor.
Right. So that's a little bit of a warning sign there.
Correct.
It's like if they want to keep self-regulation, they should self-regulate themselves, right? I mean,
Yeah. They,
you know, at least make it, you know, give the appearance of, in a sense, but more than that, really.
That's exactly my point, right? Which is, look, I'm a fan of self-regulation. I don't believe that a government bureaucrat necessarily knows better than people in the trenches as to what needs to happen. You know, just as a general rule, I feel like, and especially with real estate, you know, I know enough good, great realtors. And you saw this in Vancouver as well. I mean, as some of these things were happening, there were brokers and realtors, you know, in that town who were saying,
this is bad. I'm sure.
Yeah, this is no good. Like, this is violation of the ethics rules. You know, there's all kinds of like just shady shenanigans happening. And they were pointing it out. They were, you know, trying to do something about it. So it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like organized real estate in British Columbia just kind of turned a blind eye. Right. I mean, they were trying. It's just that they weren't, you know, able to really make things happen. And I'm saying, you know what? You have the same issue here too. Right. I mean, one of the biggest challenges for organized real estate, for the association world, is how difficult it is to even get an ethics complaint heard. Right. You know, there's a lot of complaints about how difficult it is to enforce the code of ethics. Well, you had the same problem up in Canada. So the solution is when the government steps in, they just go, yeah, we're just going to smack all that around. We're going to make it now much more easily enforceable, but not enforceable by realtors themselves, enforceable by the government. And the fines have just gone up to $250,000.
Right? Yeah. Do you think up in BC, are these temporary measures? Or I mean, I guess your opinion is once the government comes in, they very rarely leave, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's the kind of the nose under the tent thing, right? It would take some major political shift for those things not to be more or less permanent. And look at like CFPB here. I mean, it literally took, you know, the election of Donald Trump, which nobody saw coming, to even make that a topic conversation. But it's not clear to me that he's even going to be able to do that. right? I mean, think about the perfect storm that had to happen for the CFPB and Dodd-Frank, you know, to even be questioned, right?
Right.
And you have to have Republican president, Republican House, Republican Senate. Yeah, it's difficult. So imagine if California were to do this. Say the state of California, I don't know who the new AG is because Kamala Harris is a senator, right?
Right.
You know, whoever the new AG is decides, you know, he wants to, you know, make some headlines and does something, right? And so now California just copies British Columbia, you know, sort of eliminates self-regulation by the real estate industry. Okay. What would it take for that to get reversed? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, what would that take?
Yeah, I mean, it would represent a massive failure by the California Association of Realtors too, right? I mean, as far as being an advocate for and watching out for that stuff. But yeah, that's crazy.
But, you know, so I think the takeaway, the lesson here is it is true. Self-regulation is not the norm. It's kind of a privilege, right? Because let's face it, say take CAR, right? You know, Joel Singer, who does an amazing job there, let's face it, he wasn't exactly elected by the people of California to regulate real estate. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
The attorney general was. So if CAR doesn't do a great job of looking out for the consumer interest and really making sure that the consumer is protected, there's always a danger that the people who are actually elected to do that will step in.
California does have the Board of Real Estate, you know, which is state. And I know other states have those kind of real estate boards.
Sure.
That are state level, but it's nothing like, you know, what's going on that has happened up there or even close to it,
sure.
Right? So,
yeah.
Interesting.
No,
or like RESPA laws. I mean, there's stuff like that. There are things there.
Yeah.
But really, I think, you know, a real estate developer as president, he's putting out executive orders like crazy. In this kind of environment, I think, unless something crazy happens, I mean, I guess it is at a state level. It's not really... The federal thing maybe is the wrong way of looking at it. I think things are safe. We'll see.
Like
if realtors don't get, if they don't get too greedy out there, right?
Like I said, I mean, I'm not that worried about federal regulation anymore, especially in something like this. But real estate is not really regulated at the federal level, right? I'd be much more concerned about state regulation. And again, we could get into some of the details why having to police power and, you know, constitutional setup and separation of powers and federalism and all that. But you know, for our purposes, I think that that would be my concern. And again, like to me, the main takeaway for anybody listening to this should be, we got to take another look at how easy or difficult we as an industry make it to enforce our own rules. Because if we don't do self-regulation right, my point is the government certainly will step in. It's just a matter of time. And it's a matter of media firestorm. And we've seen it happen now in British Columbia. And the after effects, I guess we'll have to wait and see. But I don't know what's going to happen, right? I mean, it's almost like this canary in a coal mine. I'm almost like, I'm so glad they did it so we could take a look at what the effect is, you know, 3 to 5 years out.
Yeah. That is it. Well, this has been probably, I don't know if this will be our wonkiest podcast ever, but
it might be.
this has been pretty great. I think you're right. I think, you know, I would say a takeaway would be self-regulation is a privilege, not a right. So we all got to watch out there. So, well, thanks, Rob. This has been great.
And
hopefully we didn't, I mean, it's a super great job with the article on the trends report.
Thank
and
you.
If you guys are out there, we'll give another plug for Stefan.
Yep.
Go pick that up. They've done a great job with that today. I think it's a 2017 trends report.
Yep.
That's been another episode of Industry Relations with Rob Hahn and Greg Robertson. Talk to you guys later.
Bye, everyone.